Welcome. One last big Bundesliga showcase before the final international break of 2017. Bayern Munich topped Borussia Dortmund in their first big matchup of the season. Does that mean the title race is already over? Schalke have returned to the top four, and we discuss whether or not they have the chops to stay there. And Wolfsburg increased their draw streak under Martin Schmidt. I mean, do they even want to win games anymore? This is Tribuna Weekly. Dave Swinopdorp here with Matt Ford and Jonathan Harding. Jonathan, take us to the match day.
German Federal League Division 1, match day 11. Sports Community Frankfurt United, 2. Sport Club Werder Bremen, 1. Hamburger Sport Club, 3. Club for Agility Games Stuttgart, 1. Football Club Augsburg, 1. Bayer 04 Leverkusen Football, 1. Club for Physical Exercise Prussia Mönchengladbach, 1. First Football Club of Mainz 05, 1. Sport Club Freiburg, 0. Football Club Schalke 04, 1. Lawn Ball Sport Leipzig, 2. Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896, 1. Ball Games Club Prussia 09 Dortmund, 1. Football Club Bavaria Munich, 3. First Football Club of Cologne, 0. Gymnastics and Sports Society of 1899 Hoffenheim, 3. Club for Physical Exercise Wolfsburg Football, 3. Hertha Berlin Sport Club, 3.
All right, so the big game this weekend obviously was one that people have been circling on their calendars for years now, is the Clásica. And Bayern, of course...
We can't call it that.
Bayern, of course, came up on top, as Jonathan just read out. So the league's over, right?
I mean, yeah. It's tempting to look at it that way. It was an interesting game. I thought that actually the scoreline perhaps doesn't reflect what might have been. You know, there were quite a few chances from Dortmund. I think we've watched them in recent weeks and just been lamenting their terrible defence. But this was a case of their poorly composed attack as much as their poor defence. The first goal from Bayern might just be one of the finest sets and combinations of individual quality that I've seen all season.
Yeah, two touches from James.
The pass from Thiago, the control from James, and, you know, Matt was talking about it when we were watching the game, that movement from Robin just before the shot, it's very difficult to teach that in those situations.
He sort of moved the ball into his path without even touching it barely even touching it. So he's managed to get the ball into a position where he can hit that shot simply by making a step back. Perfect timing, and it's been talked about a million times what he does in his left foot, and that was absolutely perfectly done. So nothing that Berkey could do about that one.
No, not at all.
I mean, I was saying the title thing just as a jest.
No, but there's a certain level of that. I mean, you know, it's a long way to go, and we don't want to write things off too soon. But, you know, the most important thing about this game was that Bayern weren't that good, and they still comfortably won. I mean, that goal was special, but Dortmund had chances. Dortmund could have gone in at the break level, could have gone in ahead, arguably, right? But here we are again talking about Dortmund losing because, yeah, their defensive shape wasn't great, but more the individual errors in those moments. I think that was more of my issue, you know, just poor decision-making, poor marking.
Yeah.
That was a bigger problem. But it wasn't like Bayern outplayed them massively. They just were good in enough patches. You know, I didn't think Dortmund were completely out of the game. The chances they had certainly suggest they weren't. But how telling is that? It was just enough for Bayern.
One thing that was actually telling for me is that I think they were a little over-aggressive.
Who, Bayern?
No, and Dortmund, when they were defending. I mean, they looked much more structurally sound than they have in a long time.
That's true, yeah.
But there were some errors when Alaba would break free on the left, was going unmarked, like you said, down the left. Because Mark Bartra stepped up when he shouldn't have.
Yeah, but then you ask questions about
when you've got Mark Bartra, who's not a natural fullback, and being forced to fill in there. So it's one of the reasons why he started with a relatively conservative midfield three, in Weigl, Castro, and Kagawa. And in fact, when he brought Goetze on, it was 2-1 at that point, wasn't it? And Goetze was on the sideline about to come on, and you wonder the sort of form he's in, would that have made a difference had Bayern not going to make it 3-1. Oh, they just scored. Obviously, he was stood there, yeah.
They just scored.
By the time he came on, yeah. It was, yeah. Yeah, very unlucky timing from Dortmund's point of view.
Seriously.
But yeah, it wasn't even a case of being unable to create chances up front.
No.
What sort of struck me was a hesitation, especially on the part of Aubameyang and Yarmolenko, the two chances that they had when they both found themselves in like in one-on-one situations. And earlier on in the season, when everything was running right, and it's a natural thing to happen, isn't it? When everything's running right before, you've got that confidence flowing through you. They'd have put them away, no problem. But there was that little bit of hesitation with Aubameyang, and then Niklas Süle came with an absolutely astonishing sliding tackle, great timing. But a few weeks ago, he wouldn't get anywhere near that. Aubameyang would have finished it off. Same with Yarmolenko. Kago was a bit unlucky with his shot. He cut inside and it got deflected just wide off the outside of the post. Chances were there, but you got me more clinical and you saw that the quality of that. I didn't think Lewandowski was particularly good.
No, I don't think so either.
There was just a nuisance.
There was one part in the first half. He went through one-on-one as well and showed exactly the same hesitation.
Yeah.
And Dortmund were able to get back. Yeah. However, having said that, his movement in the box for the two goals was absolutely world-class. The first time he's got a touch on it himself and flicked it in with a help from a deflection, and the second time it's his run which has sent the Dortmund defence all over the place, and I think the ball's gone straight in the end. But that's the difference, isn't it?
I actually don't think that Dortmund played that badly either. Like, I think that they missed some markings, like you said, and that's basically where those goals came from. But I mean, Lewandowski's goal from that back heel was just almost pure luck.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they played badly per se, but you can also say that in attack they did play badly because
that's true.
That Yarmolenko miss, the first one, I think is just as bad as the miss against Hannover, because you're breaking into the box. You have enough time to put that. And he shoots right at the goalkeeper. And you don't want to be totally critical of people all the time in these situations. It's not easy. But still, that's what you bring these players in to do.
That's why it costs 25 million euros.
Yes. I mean, value doesn't necessarily, or cost doesn't necessarily
represent
the value.
Well, he's that kind of player.
But he's been playing so well.
You
know, we talked about it. You know, it's not like it would be a surprise if he was in bad form. But he's been playing so well recently. And yet, this game was basically just about how Dortmund suddenly realised that Christian Pulisic was the only player capable of playing well in this game, and then tried to make him the focal out point of their attack, and then that didn't work.
I do wonder, given the sort of performances that Pulisic is putting in, and depending on how the season turns out for Dortmund, you're going to have another situation come the end of the year when it's going to be a case of right, Bayern Munich, name your price, with Robin and Ribéry not getting any younger. Who they're going to look for to fill that gap. And on that sort of showing, there's little reasoning that Dortmund could then give to someone like Christian Pulisic to say, no, stay, even if they might be in a stronger financial position nowadays.
It was really interesting watching Pulisic at the end of the game, because the Pulisic-Süle matchup was my favorite part of the game.
Yeah, definitely.
But at the end, when he had to, basically they were kept on feeding the ball on the wing, eventually he just stopped going at Niklas Süle because he knew what the outcome was going to be. He would have to cut it back and try to do something else. We've said this multiple times this season, that's a lot of pressure to put on a 19-year-old.
It is, but I mean, remarkable that he seems capable of dealing with it. I mean, in this game, he was very composed, and I think he did his absolute best to try and create something out of nothing more than once for Dortmund. And on the flip side, you know, Niklas Süle had a brilliant game, and it made me think, God, you know, the kid's 22, what's he going to be like in 3 years if he keeps going at this rate of development? Because that is an exciting thought for Germany, because it means that their centre-back, you know, generation future is secure. But it's also just proves again that Bayern Munich did some fantastic business in bringing him in, because he is maturing. And okay, Dortmund are not at their best right now, but we talked about how many chances they had in this game, and he did his best to minimise that. And the block on Aubameyang is one. Forcing Pulisic to readjust his game plan is another. Real credit to him. You know, I don't ever want to talk about Ian Robben, talk about Bayern being efficient, but they're also pretty good in defence.
I think actually...
And Sven Ulreich had a decent game.
Yeah, I would say Niklas Süle actually was Bayern's best player.
Yeah, it's not a bad shout. The biggest problem for Dortmund now is, you know, this sort of bridging of the not bridging of the gap, but bridging of their season, really. You know, how are you going to close the difference between such a great start and such a terrible October. And I, you know, you talk about Pulisic there. I think he is going to be under some serious transfer speculation next summer, especially if Dortmund don't improve. But maybe he stays or goes, dependent on who the new head coach is. Because let's be realistic, if Peter Bosz doesn't turn this around by Christmas, then he's gone.
It's interesting.
Whether we like it or not, or whether we think it's right or not, that's the way that football works these days.
It's funny because Peter Bosz, we talked about Peter Bosz last week and how we all thought he was going to be stubborn and he wasn't going to change mm-hmm. his ways. Although, Matt, I think you said we don't really know what his tactics fully are yet because he's been in the job for 2 months or 3 months. Hearing him during the Champions League week was also very interesting. Him saying that they have a plan B, but he needs to focus on getting plan A better. That was very telling to me that, no, he's not going to change his ways. And either Dortmund's going to have to be, or basically the club is going to have to be okay with it and try to find the best players to execute his system, or they're going to have to find a new coach.
Yeah, but I don't think at the moment that's effective for Dortmund because Julian Weigl isn't playing in the best role. He's said in his own interviews he's learning how to play a new role, and that's evidently not bringing the best out of him. You know, the reason he was so good in the seasons before was because he played a simpler role and he didn't have to do all of the things that Bosz is now asking him to do.
Yeah, when Bosz said as soon as he came in that he wanted to see more goals from Weigl and he wanted to move him slightly a bit further up the pitch, which is fine from an attacking point of view, and that's precisely what Bosz wants to see. He is quite an attacking minded coach, but when you've not got someone like Weigl doing what he's best at, sat him up the back four,
exactly.
that's precisely the problems that Dortmund have.
When he was doing that on Saturday, he actually looked pretty good.
Yeah, but he didn't. You're still doing it not enough, and you're
exactly.
still asking him to do other things
exactly.
at the same time. And that's the issue. Bosz has to change the system to accommodate his players because so far his players don't work in that system. Aubameyang, okay, he's top scorer, but he hasn't scored in what, four, five now, five, right? I mean, that's not. Is that working the best way it could be or not? Because he hasn't even been in games.
To me, he's been looking increasingly lazy and disinterested and quite frustrated.
He doesn't even look in games.
And part of that's down to himself, down to his own work rates or lack of. It's also a case of, you know, it's easier to work hard up front and close defenders down and get yourself in those positions when everything's going well. But then when you need the team to be all working hard and singing from the same hymn sheet and getting stuck in for each other, you wonder if he's working hard enough up front. There's various issues, and it's like we've seen how solid Dortmund can be at the back, or at least how they can get away with it, and we've seen how they can score goals up front. I think it's just a case of forging some sort of marriage between the two, and there's absolutely nothing so far to say that Peter Bosz has done anything particularly bad to merit talks surrounding him going, potentially, or anything particularly good to say, no, this is definitely the man. We're still only 3 months in. But, yeah, as John said before, we're in this world now where people are straight away demanding answers. And that's fair enough because they're out of the Champions League, or as good as. They're off the pace in the Bundesliga now. They're third. They're level on points with Schalke. We'll talk about that in a bit. Do they want to be in the Europa League? Maybe, maybe not. They've got Dortmund in the cup. They've got Bayern in the cup, so they could be out of that. What are Dortmund's expectations? Surely if you ask Hans-Joachim Watzke what their expectations are, he's going to say they're aiming to be competing with Bayern, and that's fair enough. But they're nowhere near it at the moment.
Exactly.
Is there an expectation to get out of a group that contains Real Madrid and Tottenham Hotspur? Ideally, yeah, of course it is. That's got to be the expectation, but they're nowhere near it. And that's not, you can't fix that overnight. Personally, I think Thomas Tuchel was on the right track to getting them there, and I've said that all along, and obviously there were personal issues which led to him going, and I personally believe that they should have worked on sorting them out rather than sacking the coach, but we are where we are.
Speaking of expectations, Bayern Munich have now won every single one of their games under Jupp Heynckes, and as unsurprising that that may be, is that's Bayern. It's still surprising because they were, before Jupp Heynckes, they were not even close to going on a 7 game.
No, but
they're doing the simple things well,
though,
aren't they?
The simple
that's what Jupp Heynckes has got
exactly
them doing.
Right.
He's got a group of professionals there, and he's got them, first and foremost, defending much more compactly. They're conceding much fewer chances. That was the goal that Bartra scored was the first goal they've conceded in the league.
Yeah.
Only the second from open play, I think.
Yeah,
overall,
I think
perhaps.
So.
Anyway. Well, no. Well, I mean, Celtic scored Celtic. One from open play.
McCallum
scored one.
That's true.
Yeah, he's got him doing the simple things well, not conceding chances, and yeah, they're not that prolific up front, I'd say. And the question does raise itself that, you know, if Lewandowski's injured, where are the goals going to come from? Yeah. But that's
the issue for me, and that's the big, big picture question issue, is that if Bayern Munich are in third gear and they're undefeated in eight, they've won pretty much. Well, they've won every game, right?
Doesn't say much about the Bundesliga.
And that's the problem. Borussia Dortmund are in an adjustment period. That's quite clear. But if Bayern Munich can beat Leipzig twice in a week and then beat Dortmund the following week and win every single game under the new head coach, he's doing the simple things right, absolutely. But there's still big question marks about how that can be the case. And it just highlights further the gap. The gap is enormous. I mean, Heynckes, one thing about Heynckes, he's changed the training.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that is key, and that is why it's translating on the pitch. Javi Martinez is one of the most important players in this team all of a sudden again, right? You look at the way that he plays those passes through the final third. He steps up and out of the defense to play those passes.
And the way that he also comes into the penalty area
just,
when they need somebody to win a ball from him.
Such an important player. And Bayern look fitter. They look sharper. They look faster. He's talked about it in interviews after games, Heynckes. He said, yeah, we changed the training. It's more intense. We do more. And he said, pretty impressive that after the games we've had, my players have come in and delivered that performance against them.
So how have Bayern's expectations changed? I think they're obviously back in the Bundesliga title picture, clearly.
Yeah.
But how is their... everything that revolves around Bayern these days revolves around the Champions League. How has their Champions League expectations changed, Matt?
The expectation is still to win it, but I think they're probably further...
No, how would you expect them to do now that they've been on, they have this run in their new coach? What are your expectations of Bayern Munich?
I expect them to get knocked out the moment they come up against Madrid, Barcelona, and Real Manchester City.
Still, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the division or the gap between, that's telling as well. The gap between Manchester City, Tottenham, probably Madrid, even though they're playing really badly at the moment, and Bayern Munich is still noticeable, I think. But, you know, the beauty of this is that those games aren't going to happen until February, March. So actually, there's a lot of growth and development that can happen. They've won the league. I'm like really sorry to say that, but they would have to, it's theirs to lose.
And they're either done with Dortmund in the cup or they aren't in the cup.
Yeah, but I don't think they lose to Dortmund in the cup. I think, you know, it would take something spectacular. So if you're Uli Hoeneß, you're saying this is a dream situation. We're about to win a sixth consecutive title. We may or may not win the cup, aka the double. And if we get into the knockouts, we get to the quarterfinals, from where we were at the start of the season, that's acceptable. Because you're kind of rebuilding towards next year, because you've got to decide. You're going to keep Heynckes on and give him some slippers and a hot cup of cocoa every Friday night? Or are you going to get in a young pretender?
All right, Matt, you mentioned it before. With the Dortmund's loss, they are now tied on points with their Rivera Derby team, which is Schalke. Now, I don't think Schalke has actually looked that good to warrant a fourth-place spot, but nonetheless, they're there, so I think we should definitely talk about them. Yeah. So what do we make of their return to the top four, and do we think that they will stay there?
Yeah, like you said, now it's become a case from a Dortmund point of view, you're no longer looking at Bayern or at RB or at the Champions League. They're looking 10 minutes up the road to a team who they thought they'd left way behind. I think Hans-Joachim Watzke at one point last season said... they've left Schalke behind. There's no way that Schalke will ever be able to compete with them, either financially or in a sporting sense, ever again. Well, here they are now, level on points. Dortmund are only ahead on goal difference. And if they keep shipping goals where they have been, that won't last long either. As for Schalke, yeah, six games unbeaten now, five unbeaten in the league, into the last 16 of the cup. Home tie against Cologne, which you'd expect them to come through okay on current form. And they're getting results. I think, yeah, Davis, I agree that the performances haven't necessarily been completely clinical and completely convincing, but they're getting, yeah, they're getting results, and they're capitalizing on what's an increasingly weak Bundesliga.
Jonathan, off air, I compared Schalke to basically a zebra trying to roller skate. They still look like a zebra trying to roller skate, even though they're coming up with the points that they need, which is still nonetheless impressive.
I think with Domenico Tedesco's arrival, I think they probably got a GPS to help with that roller skating. I think that's maybe a little bit of a difference. Look, he's only been in charge of something like 25 games or in his career, right?
If
you include the hour ones. Obviously, he's done a lot of coaching at youth level, and I'm not discrediting that. But you still got to take it with a pinch of salt, or take it slightly slowly with him, because, you know, as we've said on a number of occasions, they've played well some weeks. You know, the performance against Leipzig early in the season was pretty amazing. Everyone took up and was like, wow, and sat up and took notice. And then they play Hannover and they're terrible. It's just like, well, this is exactly what we expect from Schalke. One week they're great, and the next week they're terrible. But they've seemed to have changed that form, and that's why they're level on points. I think they're going to beat Dortmund. And that will be a turning point for Dortmund in their season, because Vatska's right in many respects. They have left Schalke behind. They have internationally branded their club. Echte Liebe is seen on t-shirts everywhere in the world. People love the brand that is Borussia Dortmund. That doesn't happen for Schalke. They're still trying to figure that out. And the main reason for that is because they can't replicate it with success on the pitch. And this is an opportunity to close that gap on their rivals. And I think a win in the derby would do that.
Have they closed that gap on the pitch now, Matt?
No, not yet. But I think Tedesco has been quite clever in recognising some of Schalke's limitations, particularly going forward, where I think that Jevon Konoplyanka aside, that's simply not class and pure quality they've got up front there. Bergstaller is he's a workhorse, scored a lot of goals for them last season, but he scored enough goals for a team to finish 10th. So we're not talking about a world beater, and he scored a load of goals for Nuremberg in the second division. Yeah. Great, he did the job absolutely fine. It was what they needed, and I've got no problem with that. Franco Di Santo, I think discussed this before, he's, again, not a player who's going to score goals for you consistently.
He hadn't scored a goal in almost 600 days when he scored in the cup.
Is that how long it was?
Yeah, it was. I forget the exact number, but it was around 600 days.
And then he found the net against the mighty Vejn Wiesbaden. So, yeah, okay, fair play to Franco. Conor Pianco, though, has been absolutely outstanding. Yes. Certainly is a player who, if they do manage to establish themselves again in that top six, who I would expect to remain. The other one, well, obviously Leon Goretzka, who's been one of my standout players all season, obviously until this injury that he's picked up, and no wonder that he's started attracting attention outside of Germany as well. Mm-hmm. So whether the rumours surrounding Barcelona are true, I suppose, who knows, we'll see. And there's not much Schalke could do if an offer came in, but he's been brilliant for them. And today was a good example, I think, in Freiburg, of how Schalke are getting results now, even when they're not playing well. You mentioned the game before against Hannover, John. They were absolutely shocking there and lost deservedly. They weren't particularly brilliant in Freiburg this weekend. They sat quite deep in the first half, especially. Tedesco admitted after the game that his pressing game that he wants to instill just wasn't working for them. Freiburg hit the post twice in the first half, and when Schalke did get the breakthrough, it was a deflected shot from Caligiuri, which found its way in. Great, they've got 3 points going back home. You're not going to complain, and they're getting results when they're not playing well, so that's fantastic. And they're now, like we said, 5 games unbeaten in the league. Yeah, then they got the next game after the international break away at Dortmund, where they've not actually, well, last year especially, despite the problems under Weinziel, they actually went to Dortmund and got a very credible 0-0 draw.
That's true.
If Marcus Weinziel could get them organised and up for it enough to pull that out, that bodes well for Domenico Tedesco, who seems like he's slowly but surely stamping his own identity on the team, but I think crucially he's recognised very early what the limitations are there.
But there's still kind of this like tornado around Schalke that they develop a lot of great young players, but they never seem to figure it out. Now with Heidel as the sporting director, it seems like he's trying to figure something out, and with Domenico Tedesco as the coach, Do you think, Jonathan, that they are starting to figure it out? Or do you think that this tornado is still going to be spinning?
It's funny because, I mean, I feel like this time last year we were saying the same thing about Weinzierl and Heidel. And we were saying, are they going to figure it out? You know, is this the dream team? Because it was, you know, them coming together at that stage last season. This is Weinzierl was a coach that had overachieved with Augsburg and looked like the next young best thing to come through. Heidel has obviously got a great reputation at Mainz. But it didn't work out. So, you know, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. So I don't want to keep saying the same thing about, oh, look, Tedesco's a new head coach and it's working well. This is the new dream team. Are they figuring out? I think Schalke will always be accompanied by this tornado and expectation, because the expectation of Schalke is to win the league, for Christ's sake. You know, they want to win, because this is a team that, you know, lost tragically in the final moments. And that's a trauma that stays with you for generations. So there's a certain level of, you know, I don't know, empathy that's required when you think about Schalke, because they've gone through something that very few clubs go through. That kind of trauma stays with you for a really long time.
They've also been catastrophically managed time and time again.
Before Heidel, as a head coach they have, but before Heidel, the management is not very professional, right? And he's come in and he spent a lot of money on improving the facilities. You only have to go to Gelsenkirchen to one of the training sessions to see the number of works, road works and building construction sites that are going on there. They're trying to improve the facilities to make it world class so that they can raise the profile of the club. Because, you know, they had like fitness centres and training centres were like old school gyms 5 years ago, you know, and that can't be right. So they're trying to change that image and the facilities and everything they've got around the club at the same time as being able to produce on the pitch.
Well, yeah, at least you have to sate those expectations a little bit on the part of the fans. And that's one of the problems. That's one of the hurdles they have to try and overcome, one of the balances they have to try and strike. Because if the way it's looking this season, there's absolutely no reason why they can't get back into Europe. Maybe even that fourth spot. It's up for grabs, but we'll see how things develop. And that's where the fans want to be. The fans really, really got stuck into that Europa League campaign last season. Obviously, it was 20 years.
Should have beaten Ajax.
Yeah, well, yeah, 2017 back to 1997. It was the 20-year anniversary of the year they won the UEFA Cup, and the fans were going to every away game across the continent with their Eurofighter scarves. Yep. They really got behind it because that's the sort of club they consider themselves to be. Mm. It's fascinating. The club's huge. It becomes such a tiny part of a relatively small city, and yet they have this aura which goes across the entire country, and that was great to see, and that's where they feel they belong. Problem comes now is that if this season they qualify for the Europa League or maybe even the Champions League, that they're going to be in that competition with that problem of fighting on two fronts. And I think there are comparisons with Liverpool, actually, that the whole club will then take that so seriously because it's where they feel they belong, and that with the squad they have in the short term is going to be to the detriment of their league form, which then goes back to the start of the circle and we'll see them finish 10th again.
Yeah, exactly.
So they have to get that right, and I think it's down to Heidel to get the balancing act right, isn't it? Mm. If once they are there, the club's big enough, surely the money's there to be able to either keep the likes of Goretzka or attract players of the calibre necessary to maintain a fight on two or three fronts, which is what they all expect. But you can't do it all at once.
But Tedesco's done clever things for a relatively young manager. You know, the Max Meyer wanted away. His decision to move him back in defensive midfield was very sensible. It's worked out. He hasn't really talked about the Goretzka thing because he's trying to, you know, that's a difficult thing to handle. I'm quite suspicious that Löw didn't pick him, you know, from what I read. He didn't pick him in the Germany squad so that he could get a deal done.
Well, he also
in
has
the week.
Well, they said that he might have a leg fracture.
Well, there's that too, yeah.
So that might be the reason, but you might have a point.
I'm not a medical expert, but a stress reaction, I've seen it described as. I have no idea what that is, but apparently reading a little bit further, it can quite easily turn into some sort of fracture. No idea what that is at all, but then again, I think given that Germany's qualifying campaign is done and dusted...
There's no need for him to pick him. I'm just saying,
just
I feel like...
There's no need for him to go anywhere.
I feel like, you know... It's all a bit of smoke and mirrors, but the point is that Tedesco seems to have managed the squad well in a difficult situation with his best player wanting away and one of the former best players wanting away, losing form, not really deserving that, rediscovering his form in a different position. Naldo is playing like he was 10 years ago, which is pretty phenomenal considering how bad he was at the end of last season. And if you suddenly looking really solid with players like Bastian Achikpa, even Weston McKennie's looks solid, you know, young players coming through or average to solid players that used to play mid-table sides now doing a good job for you. You've got one of the best goalkeepers in the league who should really be in the Germany squad. And you build a foundation of that. So I totally agree with Matt about the fact that it's largely a mediocre team, really, if you boil it down. But the key players are playing well, and that is raising the performance of other players.
Matt said that they're going to return to Europe. Do you think they're going to turn to re-up, John?
Yes, I think so. I think not only is it important for the fan base because they're extremely passionate, and I think Matt hit the nail on the head with his description of how important it is to those fans to be there, but they got the quality to do it under this coach because, unlike Dortmund, Tedesco is using those players the right way for that system, or he's created a system in which they're working.
Rather than imposing the system on a set of players who perhaps aren't quite suited or ready.
And that's why the derby should be fascinating.
All right, so the Clásico was this weekend, but it was not the most entertaining game this weekend.
It wasn't the classic game.
What a game. Yeah. What a game.
Yeah, wow.
So that game belonged to the 3-3 draw between Wolfsburg and Hertha Berlin. And we want to get on to Wolfsburg because this 7-match-in-a-row draw streak is just...
Draw Schmidt. That's what they're going to call him now. Draw
Schmidt. It's just weird on so many levels. But for those who actually missed the game, Matt, I think you need to take people
Well, we're recording this on Sunday night, so the game finished about 4 hours ago or so. I got up this morning thinking, right, what have we got later on? I've got to finish the day with Wolfsburg against Hertha Berlin, and yeah, well, that's not lie. It wasn't a fancy staying in bed, to be honest. And then in the build up to it, Wolfsburg started their light show. These flashing lights, silly mascot walking around the pitch. I thought, my God, what am I watching here?
What a way to end the Sunday.
I cannot be bothered with this. Get the light show over, start the football. 20 seconds in, Ivicevic, 1-0. What a start. I was like, okay, right, this could be all right. 4 minutes later, 1-1. Oh, hang on, no, it's not. VAR's disallowed it. Slightly after that, was it the penalty that then came first? Penalty which Mario Gomez then smashes against the bar.
He's been absolutely awful with penalties this season too.
So it's still 1-0. Although in my head I'm now convinced it's 2-1.
Yeah.
But it's still 1-0. Shortly after that, they have the ball in the net again and it's disallowed again with the VAR. So it's still 1-0, but the fans in the stadium are all convinced it's 3-1. next thing you know, obviously all the standard chants are coming out. You've got Wolfsburg as a works club saying that they hate the DFB and the video refs are ruining the game and blah, blah, blah. Hertha have benefited from these two calls, which are absolutely correct, by the way. The benefit of these two calls, even their fans are saying, oh, the DFB is rubbish, you've ruined the game. Meanwhile, it's still, I think, 1-0.
Try and keep up, everybody.
Five minutes before full time.
Half time.
Before half time, Wolfsburg go and score 2 in 3 minutes. And they go in 2-1 up, where Gomez and
even though it's 5-1 in a parallel universe.
Absolutely no idea what the score was. Everyone put the kettle on, have a brew at half time. outstanding first half, one of the most exciting first halves I've seen this season. Both teams completely open, both teams going for it. And to bring us back onto Wolfsburg and Martin Schmidt, it pretty much sums up how they've been since he took over. They're scoring goals, no problems with that. They scored 2 away at Bayern. Another 2-2 draw against, who was it?
Bayer Leverkusen.
Against Leverkusen, they scored goals there. They've scored 3 away from home here today. But yeah, they're also, well, fair play to Schmidt, he's playing attacking football, but they're leaving themselves open at the back and they're shipping them as well. Which now means that they've gone 7 draws from 7 games.
But if they keep drawing, they'll get enough points to stay up. So they just draw every single game and they must have won one already, right? Won a couple already?
Not under Schmidt.
No, this season. How many points they got?
One under Jonker, didn't they, early on?
So how many points they got now? Well, they have like 7 points from the draw, 1 from the win.
Well, just under Schmidt, they've got
7.
The 7 points, which is 3 times more points than Cologne have.
Yeah, so just draw every game. I like it. What an approach. 34 games plus a win, 37. You'd probably be safe with that. Yeah.
You score two, we'll score two. Oh, you score three, we'll score three.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, well, they have 11 points on the season.
Right, so what are we on? Match day 11. They have 11 points. That leaves us with 23 match days. So that's 23 points. That's 34. Probably not enough.
Might be enough for fourth at this rate. Yeah.
What a game, though. Blimey, that sounds like one not to miss.
Yeah, but they...
Which I did.
It's, they also, I mean, it's their midfield looks like a complete mess, though. And I mean, they are scoring goals, which is also really weird. But they're not scoring like
But their defense is also who did they play again today? Urukai, Tisserand,
Brooks, Knocker, Verhaag across the back. Which it doesn't instill you in huge confidence.
Verhaag is probably still a midfielder, even though
And Brooks is coming back from a long-term injury and basically is just taking the pension packet by moving to Wolfsburg.
But he's got that attack working extremely well. All four of them today: Mali, Didavi, Origi, and Gomez. Yeah. All causing problems.
Origi's been good.
How many has he scored since he came on loan from Liverpool?
They're talking about him staying.
I wouldn't surprise me.
On this form, Klopp will have him back, so he won't be going anywhere. Gomez, always a danger, although he's missed two pens in 2 weeks now. So, although the one today,
smash it down the middle, or...?
Pretty much down the middle, yeah. He smashed it high and it's come back off the bar and landed in the other half, probably. He hit it that hard. You say bad pen, obviously he missed, but so that's two in 2 weeks.
Yeah, but it's they also had a chance to win. That's what's so weird. This club is even more weird than it was when it was just like a works club, like it was being successful. This is, I mean, the fact that they still had a chance to win and they still didn't. It's like they don't even want to win anymore.
I think they just got so used to drawing. I think they don't know what else to do. David, it's weird, isn't it? This team. You know, how like the ups and downs. You remember how good this team was when De Bruyne was in this team? My goodness.
Yeah, there was an article that I read a few weeks ago where it showed like the picture was just all of the players that were part of the cup. Because they won the German Cup year with Kevin De Bruyne.
Yeah, absolutely. And deservedly so. They were much better.
Yeah, and it showed an X over almost every single one of their players, except for someone like Sebastian Jung, who's been injured since that Cup final. And it's just, but we talked about it when he was appointed. This was a classic like small club victory.
Yeah.
And that's what Wolfsburg is now. And I think that's maybe what's weird about it, but that's just the way it is.
Oh, I think it's been that way obviously that perception, that international perception changes when you have a German team in the Champions League and they beat Real Madrid and people are like, oh, wow, you know, let's take them a bit more seriously. And then, you know, if anybody doesn't watch German football, they're like, didn't Wolfsburg beat Real Madrid a few years ago? And they're like, what are they doing now? And they're like, oh, they're drawing 3-3 at home with Hertha. You know, like, that's where we're at. And that's what's really interesting. And I think that's a kind of a warning to other Bundesliga sides. Don't follow that. Don't stumble down that same road and end up being the side that plays in Europe once every 6 years.
Yeah, as much as they're getting these points slowly but surely on the board, they are looking at the table. They are getting away with it slightly, given that Cologne and Bremen.
Given there's some sides playing terrible.
Absolutely hopeless. And I mean, Hamburg got their first win today since match day two. And that's how bad they've been. So yeah, Wolfsburg are getting away with that. But Martin Schmidt has always played good football at the teams that he's been at.
That's true.
He had Mainz playing good football and took them into the Europa League. And he's got that front four working fantastically at Wolfsburg. So good luck to them.
But it's way too early to tell, because especially with this weird run. But is Martin Schmidt the kind of manager that's going to get them back to Europe, or is he just going to be the guy that keeps them in mid-table, keeps them relevant, keeps the club successful off the field?
I think if the question is about Europe, I think it's out of Martin Schmidt's hands. Yeah. I think it's out of whatever coach they have. I think it's out of their hands. We discussed it a few podcasts back, saying that
when he was appointed,
just by the very nature of Wolfsburg and what it is and where they are geographically, they are going to struggle if Volkswagen aren't pumping in massive money to be able to attract players who are then happy to commute from Berlin or Hanover every day. That was the case before the emissions scandal. They were able to do that and they became a relatively steady fixture in the Champions League and challenged at the top of the Bundesliga. Since that, the money's gone out. They've had to sell the best players for big money, and that's not been reinvested in the club. But, so I don't think it really matters how well Max Schmidt does. I think he will do well.
Well, but it might. But this is why I'm saying it might, because he did take a Mainz team that, if you look at the players that were on that Mainz team, which is John Cordoba, who did nothing before he was injured, Yoshinori Muto, who hasn't done much since basically he was getting attention from the English clubs. And there wasn't a lot of players in that team. One of the players that he had was Yunus Mali, who's in his Wolfsburg team now. That's why I'm asking the question.
Yeah, but I think the problem is, and I think that's what Matt's alluding to, is I think the problem with Wolfsburg is even asking that question. You can ask it with Mainz and be like, oh yeah, okay, that'd be an adventure. But Wolfsburg don't even, asking that question and saying, oh, are we going to get this side back into Europe? Back into Europe is the problem. They need to start on page one and figure out what they're doing, where they're going, stabilise a bit. Because actually, you can't be a yo-yo team and be successful, really. I mean, you're going to say Wolfsburg, what do Wolfsburg do? They get into Europe next season, then they go on a summer spending spree, which is dependent on their investments, right? And then they don't get that. Then they go into Europe and they tank and they lose to Fiorentina, and then they're finishing in a relegation battle the following season.
We said at the start of the season there's a big identity issue at Wolfsburg, yeah. Especially when the company that they're so reliant on isn't able to support them in the way they'd like to, whereas the opposite is probably true of Mainz, where despite them qualifying for the Europa League, there is always this quite strong identity in Mainz. They know exactly what they are. They know they're a relatively small club surrounded by huge clubs. The likes of Cologne and Frankfurt aren't too far away in either direction. There was an acceptance of that, all right, we're Mainz, we've got into Europe, we're therefore going to struggle in the league the year after. Whether we're in Europe or not, the investment's not going to come, but we accept where we are, and now they're playing decent football again. Now they've got a good point away at Mönchengladbach and could even have won 2-1.
Could even have won, yeah.
Whereas Wolfsburg, there'd be that expectation. Let's say Schmidt gets them into Europe, there'll be the expectation that they then build on that again, for which they need Volkswagen's money, which at the moment, because of other issues, is not going to be forthcoming. So, yeah, lack of identity there, bit of a problem, but it won't do Martin Schmidt any harm if he does well with them.
That'll do it for this week's edition of Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, and if you have the time, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Matt Ford is at Matt_4 and the letter D. Jonathan Harding is at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's, and I'm at Davis_VanOptorp. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. Cologne is only the fourth team to collect just 2 points in their first 11 Bundesliga games. All of the other teams got relegated. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.